are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. Happy Thursday, everybody. Today we're going to hit the quick NBA updates, including the high points from Commissioner Adam Silver's interview on ESPN Wednesday night, as well as a couple of other Wolves notes off the top, as we've been doing here recently. And then we're going to talk through the potential positives of this layoff for the Timberwolves. We talked negatives in terms of lack of player evaluation, especially for the restricted free agents, Malik Beasley, Juancho Hernangómez. We talked about that the other day. But let's try and stay positive. Let's talk through, I guess, what could be good about missing some games, provided that the team returns to action at some point this summer. Or spring, hopefully. First, a quick reminder to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves, at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. All right, so Adam Silver was on ESPN on Wednesday evening, talked to Rachel Nichols, and talked about a number of things. There's also a pretty good summary of the interview by Tim Bontemps of ESPN. Silver admitted that he has no idea when the season's starting, basically, or restarting. And then he was asked by Nichols if he was considering canceling the season. And Silver's response was, quote, "I'm optimistic by nature. I want to believe we can salvage some form of the season," end quote. So great that he's optimistic. Absolutely. And good to hear him say that. But at the same time, clearly that answer means that that's one of the possibilities on the table. And I think we all know that, but it's hard to wrap our minds around. I know there's been some guys nationally that have been talking about this is legit, where it could just get canceled. And then he went on to say that, so ESPN had already reported that mid to late June was the earliest realistic start date, with or without fans. That part's not really clear. And then Silver basically just responded with, "Yes, when public health officials give us the okay," and that's all he would really say. So they really are, he said that they would be ready when public officials said it was good to go. So clearly they're working through some different contingency plans of, you know, if we're told that June 15th can be a target or June 25th can be a target, then they're going to work backwards from that and get players ready, get arenas ready. We'd already heard that the league was getting arenas, getting dates sent over from arenas all the way through August. So clearly there's a number of different scenarios on the table, whether it be restarting the conditions, restarting the season under normal conditions, playing the games with no fans, et cetera. There's lots of things that have been discussed at the league level. And then there's a third option, which is really intriguing, that Adam Silver mentioned. This is a direct quote now, and this was basically transcribed here by Tim Bontemps. Silver says, quote, "A third option we're looking at now, the impact on the national psyche of having no sports programming on television. One of the things we've been talking about are there conditions in which a group of players could compete. Maybe it's a giant fundraiser or the collective good of the people, where you take a subset of players. Could you test them and quarantine them, isolate them in some way, and could compete against each other? People are stuck at home. I think they need a diversion. They need to be entertained," end quote. So that's something that I think has probably been tossed around out there. The idea of could there be some, you know, why couldn't the players be quarantined and then play? I mean, there's a lot of reasons why you can't do that with entire teams. I mean, you're talking not just 12 players, but coaches and support staff. And I mean, you're usually a traveling party is 40 to 50 plus people. So it's asking a lot of people to quarantine themselves for several weeks just to play basketball, you know, be away from friends and family. And then also you have to have some people work the arena. And so it'd just be a massive undertaking. But could you take 25, 30 players and ask them, maybe incentivize them in some way and say, "Hey, let's go quarantine ourselves and then play a couple of games for the fans." And they could play around with some different, you know, one of the things Bontemps mentioned in his article is they could do some different things, like the Elam ending at the end of the All-Star game, where the teams played to a certain number, and just, you know, do some skills competitions and things like that. It'd be a lot of fun. And if this thing goes on for several more weeks, that's something that, fans would love. The longer that we go into this thing, the more hungry people are for basketball. And especially if it's starting to look like the writing's on the wall that the season might be over and they're not even going to try, then I think this is a great solution, or not a solution, but I guess a you know, making the best of a bad situation by the league. So great to hear that it's something they've actually discussed. And I'm sure it's just, they're essentially having massive brainstorming sessions of the best way to engage with fans. during a really difficult time. So interesting to be sure. And certainly something that I think they could pull off if they had enough players who are really interested in doing that. But good on the commissioner for coming out and talking a little bit. Obviously, he didn't have a whole lot. Other than that, there was no other breaking news. He doesn't have much more information than the rest of us do in terms of when they think they're going to be able to start playing. And so it was good for him to come out and face the media and at least have that, you know, have that conversation. One other quick Timberwolves note. The Timberwolves had Josh Okogie take on Ty Jerome of the Phoenix Suns in a 2K matchup. Apparently the Suns are going through and playing the rest of the regular season on Twitch on NBA 2K so that fans can watch. And this was the second game that the Suns played, and this time it was Ty Jerome. He took on Josh Okogie. According to ESPN, the final score was 93-63. Phoenix won by 30. So I don't know what that means about Phoenix's roster versus Minnesota's. I would imagine Towns wasn't available to play in this game virtually. And clearly that tells me Josh Okogie's not very good at NBA 2K. According to this article, the viewership was somewhere in the vicinity of 15,000 to 20,000 viewers and climbed each quarter. So there is definitely some appetite for this. I mean, we already know that there's an appetite for folks to be on Twitch and watch video games, but to have two NBA players playing their teams against each other was pretty cool. There's no mention in this ESPN article of stats for the Wolves in the virtual game, but Ty Jerome said that Devin Booker had a big game. Ricky Rubio had 6 assists. DeAndre Ayton's better than the game let him be around the hoop. So there you go. There's a virtual Timberwolves game that happened. Josh Okogie needs to work on his 2K game. And cool that the Suns are doing this. It sounds like they're going to have different players play each game. So if you're looking for some interesting content out there during this layoff, pay attention to what the Suns are doing and give that a look. All right, before we move on and talk about optimism related to the hiatus and what this could mean positively for the Wolves, I did want to mention our new friends at Postmates. From an early morning breakfast burrito to a 12-pack of beers while you watch the game, sometimes you just need what you need delivered fast, and that's where Postmates comes in. And really, there isn't a better time to look at starting to order from Postmates than now. Everybody's basically stuck at home as it is, and this is the perfect time to go ahead and give this a shot. If you're like me, you're probably thinking about what to eat for dinner while you're eating lunch. I love food, and that's why I love using Postmates. They deliver food from every restaurant I can think of right to my door. But Postmates doesn't just deliver burgers and sushi. They actually make my life easier with grocery delivery and whatever I can think of delivery too. Convenience stores, clothing stores, you name it. So no more trips to the store, no more late night fast food runs. I don't even have to worry about where to grab lunch anymore. Just download Postmates on iOS or Android, find your favorites, and get anything you want delivered within the hour. For a limited time, Postmates is giving our listeners $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days. To start your free deliveries, download the app and use code LOCKEDONNBA. That's code LOCKEDONNBA for $100 of free delivery credit with no minimum purchase for your first 7 days when you download the Postmates app. Anything you need, anytime you need it, Postmate it. So the other day we talked about the negatives of this layoff for the Timberwolves, especially related to being able to evaluate their new roster. And really, the whole roster was remade after the deadline. There was like 7 or 8 new guys on the team and basically 5 new members of the rotation. The biggest, clearly some of these guys are under contract. Obviously, D'Angelo Russell, James Johnson still got a year left with the team. But the big ones are the restricted free agents, Juancho Hernan Gomez, Malik Beasley. What are they going to be worth in restricted free agency? What are other teams going to be willing to pay for them? And do the Wolves have any interest in either trading one of them, a sign and trade, or potentially locking up one of them with a multi-year deal before they hit restricted free agency? What are they going to do related to the qualifying offer? So many question marks. And that's one of the reasons the Nuggets made the trade, because they didn't want to have to pony up for guys who are fringe rotation players, and they also didn't want to lose them for nothing. So they traded them for players who they felt like could fit their rotation moving forward. That's why the Nuggets made the move. And for the Timberwolves, they saw somebody like, especially Malik Beasley, someone who wasn't getting the opportunity he needed and fit a need for the Timberwolves. Now, as we talked about the other day, the question is, can he be good enough on defense? Can a defense with D'Angelo Russell, Karl Anthony Towns, and Malik Beasley as the 3 best offensive players, can that team have a decent defense? And that remains to be seen. So that's kind of the biggest issue in terms of valuation for the Wolves. You know, those guys have each only played 14 games. Not to mention the secondary piece of that is Towns and D'Angelo Russell have shared the court for 1 game. Towns and the rest of the newcomers, Beasley, Hernan Gomez shared the court for two games. We talked about that already a couple days ago. And then Towns was out, and you know, Russell missed his first game on the Wolves roster. And we just don't know what this team really looks like as fully constructed when they get on the court together. And that's an issue. And then throw in on top of that, you know, James Johnson has a player option for next year. He's not going to turn down 15 or 16 million, whatever it is. You know, at his age, he's not going to turn that down. So do the Wolves try and trade him as an expiring deal? You know, what does that look like next season? I think it's extremely likely he's back with the team at the start of the year, but it'd be good to see some additional games with him playing with Towns. How do they work together? You know, what does that look like for the Timberwolves moving forward? So it's just another piece of evaluation that the Wolves will be missing without having the ability to see those guys play together. And then there's the other guys that are kind of more fringe players who are under contract and will get a shot, you know, potentially even like Jacob Evans III might play in summer league at this point. I think that's pretty likely. Amari Spellman, I don't know if he's got a future with the team or not. Jared Vanderbilt, I've talked about him on this podcast, is someone I'm excited to see. So it really segueing into the potential positives of this hiatus, and really there's nothing good about it. And obviously this is speaking nothing to the reason for the layoff, but the Wolves theoretically have some more time to self-scout. While obviously it's their job and the front office would have been doing this anyways, this gives the coaching staff especially some time to perhaps watch film of the last 14 games. How has the defense looked with D'Angelo Russell? Trying to get ahead of some of the things that they would otherwise probably do in the offseason in June, July, and August. Now they have the opportunity to truly evaluate that with the opportunity potentially to play more games this season. This team might still hit the court for a handful of games. And my prediction the other day is that they play five or six more regular season games at some point in June. And maybe they're able to make some adjustments that then give them a better handle on what this team looks like next year from a roster makeup standpoint. That's just one reason. I mean, they can, you know, take a step back and look at themselves in that sense. And then secondarily to that, if the season does indeed come back at any point this summer, there's going to be at least a couple week ramp up, you know, almost like a mini training camp where players will have to make sure they're back into game shape. Teams will have to reacclimate with one another. And that could give Ryan Saunders some important time to see how these pieces fit in a practice setting, maybe implement anything new that they've discovered while they were self-scouting. And I think that can't be underestimated how important that would be. I mean, this team probably has only practiced 2, 3, 4 times minus, you know, not including shoot-arounds and walkthroughs in hotel ballrooms after this trade deadline. I mean, there was only a month that the team was together. And again, no Towns. Russell missed a game. And just not the full makeup of what this team is supposed to be. And then the third thing that is super positive that I think has, you know, is kind of flying under the radar is all the injury recoveries. And primarily that's Carl Anthony Towns. Everybody else was, for the most part, healthy. I suppose Keelan Martin sprained his ankle right before the layoff started, about a week before. But Towns' fractured wrist, we're now at about a month since the Wolves announced that he fractured his wrist. Almost a month. I guess there was a two-week evaluation period after the All-Star break and then another two. And we're right at about that right now. I think it'll be this weekend, actually, would be the second two-week time frame when they said they'd reevaluate. So I'm sure they're going to do another MRI on Towns' wrist, see what it looks like, see if the reported fracture it has healed, and perhaps he can get back to working out normally and shooting and all that stuff, although I guess it was his left wrist, so he's probably been shooting one-handed, but be able to work out more normally and lift weights and all that stuff. And then perhaps if the season comes back in 4 to 6 weeks, he should be healthy enough to practice and to play. And the Wolves should be able to get a fully healthy and recovered Towns on the floor with a fully rested D'Angelo Russell, Malik Beasley. And of course, Beasley's going to be playing for a contract and Hernan Gomez is playing for a contract. And they'd be able to see all these guys play together, see how they might fit together. And that's something that at this moment, we don't know if, you know, sitting there 2 weeks ago or a week and a half ago for that matter, we had no idea whether or not we'd see Towns on the court again this season. It was starting to seem unlikely. As much as he clearly wanted to play, the Wolves didn't have much incentive to push him into playing. And so this could be a hidden benefit if the league does come back and play a handful of games. And again, we don't know, and we don't know how many there would be. We don't know if it would just be playoffs and that would leave the Wolves out of the conversation, obviously, anyways. But there are some silver linings here, and I think it's important to hang on to those as we kind of take a step back and evaluate. All right, we're going to take one more break, and we'll be right back. Okay, it's time for a brand new and somewhat surprise segment. This is Thursday. We're going to go with a throwback Thursday. And in some ways, this is a happy throwback Thursday. And in some ways, it's kind of sad. We're going to look back 3 months into the season and see what was going on 3 months ago for the Timberwolves in this, our first edition of Throwback Thursday during the NBA hiatus. We are going to go back all the way to, so today's March 19th. We're going to go back to, the Wolves actually didn't play on November 19th, but they played on the 18th and the 20th. So we're going to look at what they were up to. November 19th, exactly 3 months ago, the Wolves were in between a home and home against the Utah Jazz. Does that ring any bells for anybody? The Timberwolves actually went to Utah and beat the Jazz, who, of course, were expected to be a top, you know, three or four seed in the West. They're likely, I think right now they're sitting fifth. No, they might be fourth now, actually, in the West. But they were expected to be even better than they are. The Wolves went into the game with a 7-6 record, had just, you know, lost a couple of games. But they won the home-and-home in Utah by 10 points, or they won the first end of the home-and-home. The players that played in this game for the Timberwolves, starting lineup was Jeff Teague, Travion Graham, Jake Lehman, Robert Covington, and Karl-Anthony Towns. Two of those guys are still on the team. This was actually the game that Jake Lehman got hurt in initially when he got his sprained toe injury that cost him 41 games, 3 months almost, or I guess 2.5 months. But he actually started this game off the bench. Josh Okogie, Keelan Martin, Jarrett Culver, Gorgui Dieng, Kata Bates-Diop. So actually, because Lehman played in this game, there's 5 of the 10 players that appeared for the Wolves that are still on the roster, which is pretty surprising. On the bench that did not play, Naz Reid, of course, still with the team, Jordan Bell and Noah Vonleh, who were both traded. So half of the rotation was actually that played in that game is actually still on the Timberwolves and is still with the team. For Utah, Bojan Bogdanović led the way with 18 points, 6 rebounds in the starting lineup. Donovan Mitchell only had 17 points, shot 5 of 23. It actually looked like the Wolves' defense was somewhat decent in this game. Rudy Gobert had 16 and 14 and was probably the best player on the floor for the Jazz. For the Timberwolves, Karl-Anthony Towns had 29 and 13, plus 5 assists, 2 steals, 2 blocks. Did have 5 turnovers, but he was fantastic in this game. 7 of 15 beyond the arc. And this was kind of the pinnacle of teams weren't willing, and I remember this, Gobert would not step out beyond the arc to guard Towns. And Towns was just, I mean, he made 7 of 15 threes. He was just launching from his favorite spot a couple of feet beyond the top of the arc. Straight away, and Gobert was just failing to get out and guard him. And then I haven't looked at the box score yet, but I'm pretty sure that the next game, Towns did not shoot nearly as many threes in the home and home and the Jazz won, but we'll get to that here in a second. This game, the best plus minus for the Wolves, Keelan Martin off the bench. This was his initial breakout game. He had 14 and 6. This was his first significant minutes as a two-way player for the Wolves, played 24 minutes. Remember, Jake Lehman did get hurt right before halftime of this game. Martin was a team best plus 21 off the bench. Josh Okogie was a plus 12, which was the second best mark on the team. In the starting lineup, Travion Graham went scoreless in 24 minutes, 0-4 shooting, missed all 3 3-point attempts, which fits with exactly what everyone would have expected. Jeff Teague had 21 and 11, was very good, and only 2 turnovers, was a plus 6. Robert Covington had 15 and 8, 2-5 shooting from 3-point range. And the Wolves improved to 8-6 after this game. Won the tough part of the home and home, the road game on a Monday night in Utah. And it really felt like this Wolves team was stabilizing a little bit after the hot start, a couple of rough games. And it felt like things were going to be okay. And this team was at least going to be competitive in relation to the bottom part of the playoffs. And then the bottom really kind of fell out for the Wolves. And, you know, we're going to look at the next game here in a second, but taking a step back, actually, no, let's look at that game first before we take a step back. 2 days later, the Wolves took on the Jazz at Target Center, ultimately lost by 8. This was a game that the Wolves were down early, came back, and it was a fairly close game throughout. The Wolves could not slow down Bogdanović or Mitchell in this game. Mitchell had 26 and 7 rebounds. Bogdanović had 30. Rudy Gobert had 12 and 15 with 5 blocks in this game. Mike Conley had 16 and 8. And sure enough, Towns had a good game. He shot 4 of 7 beyond the arc and had 14 and 12, but only attempted 10 total shots in this game, 7 of them beyond the arc. So half as many 3-point attempts as he did just 2 nights earlier against the same team, and did not have any success. I mean, he's 5 of 10 shooting, 4 of 7 beyond the arc, so he's 1 of 3 inside the arc. He just didn't get shots off against Gobert in the paint. And part of that scheme and part of that is Towns probably, I mean, he only had 2 offensive rebounds in the game, and Gobert's simply very good, and that's a big part of it too. Andrew Wiggins did not play in that game in Utah, and I had forgotten that. It was one of just a couple of games he missed early in the season. In this game, he had 22 and 7, but it took him 24 shots to get his 22 points. He shot just 1 of 10 beyond the arc and attempted 3 free throws, making just 1. Towns didn't attempt a single free throw. So the Wolves had rough games from both their best players, just with an overall lack of production. Covington had only had 11. Teague had 12 and 6. Keelan Martin had 10 off the bench. Jarrett Culver had 10 off the bench, but it took him 14 shots. The Wolves as a team shot 39% from the field, 31% on three-point attempts. Just a really all-around disappointing game for Minnesota. They were still competitive. They only lost by 8, but they only managed to score 95 points and again, just simply weren't efficient. They allowed Bogdanovich and Mitchell to really go off and Gobert to control the paint, Conley to have a good game, and that was that. And that really kind of started this spiral for the Wolves that never really stopped. I mean, looking at their overall schedule since this game, remember, this was coming into this, they'd lost 2 in a row before going to play at Utah. They won that game. They were 8-6. Then they lost to Utah, lost to Phoenix, then had those back-to-back road wins on that quick road swing right before Thanksgiving, at Atlanta, at San Antonio. That was the night before Thanksgiving. And then there was the first big losing streak. So they went Thanksgiving to Christmas with no wins. And that initial losing streak was, what, 11 or 12 games? They won that double overtime game at Sacramento the day after Christmas. And then they played okay for the next week and a half, had some easy wins over bad teams, over Brooklyn, over Golden State, Cleveland. And then they did beat Portland. And then there was the second long losing streak. In the middle of that is when Jeff Teague was traded. Then the win over the Clippers right after the trade deadline. And then another 5-game losing streak. And then since then, the Wolves have stabilized a little bit. They won those back-to-back games against New Orleans and Chicago on back-to-back nights. But this Jazz victory was really the last impressive win. I mean, the road win at San Antonio was nice, but the Spurs aren't what they typically are. And at that moment, it was still like, okay, the Wolves are 10-8. What's this team going to look like? But this win at Utah was one of the more impressive wins of the season for the Wolves. And it was kind of the last time, you know, 3 months ago that we could genuinely feel good about where the Timberwolves sat as a team, which is sad, but also just shows you how much changes in 3 months' time and how crazy that is. If I do this 3-month throwback much longer, it's not going to be pretty. We're going to get into these long losing streaks here pretty quick, but maybe I'll pick my spots here for the rest of this layoff and see, really just taking a peek back to see what the how different the rotation is compared to 3 months prior. All right, that's all we have for you here today. Thanks once again for listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. Subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. That wraps up this edition of Locked On Wolves. Now, tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of Rejecting the Screen. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.